Really quick here at the top of the show, guess what? I've got a new single out. Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, I put out a new single. You never know. You never know with me. You never know what's coming out next. I mean, every day you can count that it's probably going to be a TikTok video, probably a post on Instagram, maybe a tweet, maybe a YouTube video. But I got a new single out. It's streaming right now. You can push pause and go over and listen to it on Spotify or Apple Music. You can go buy it on Bandcamp. And guess what? There's a music video to go along with it, a full-length music video that me and my friend Kramer England made that is on YouTube. I'm very proud of this one. I'm always proud of the music videos that we make together, but this one turned out really nice. I think you're really going to like it. Do me a favor. Go over and listen to the song. It's called Whatever You Can Do. It's my brand new release on streaming platforms. Watch the music video, and if you like it, do me a favor and let people know about it. Share it on your Instagram story, share it on Facebook, share it on Twitter, whatever it is that you share things on, let people know about it, because I'm really excited about it, and I want to get the word out there. It's always hard for me to market my music and to promote this stuff, so if you enjoy the song, if the song speaks to you, if you like the music video, let people know about it. Thank you so much. The other thing right here at the top of the show is patreon.com/AustinArcher. If you didn't already know, somehow, we've got a Patreon for this stuff, for the TikToks, for the music, for the podcast. I got a Patreon that you can be a part of. I let you in on early access for content that I'm putting out. I ask your advice, and I look at your feedback. We chit-chat back and forth. We do Zoom hangs. Sometimes I'll send out, you know, little swag things in the mail. All my Patreon patrons, I just want to say to you really, really quickly that I love you very much. I'm so thankful for your patronage. You really overwhelm me with your generosity, and I'm just so happy that you are here supporting the content, supporting this work. And if you're out there listening, and if you're an avid consumer of the TikToks, of the Instagram content, of the Twitter content, of the YouTube content, or of this podcast, or all of the above, and you would like to support in some way, that's a great way to do it. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Okay, here's the show. One thing capitalism loves to assert to us over and over again is the idea that the cream rises to the top. That the people making the most money, collecting the most awards, and living the most lavish and comfortable lifestyles are there because they worked the hardest and had the most talent and intelligence. One of my favorite things that new media has shown to us is that talent, intelligence, and work ethic are not as rare of properties as we once thought them to be. Giving most people access to a camera and a means of showing off their skills to a global audience has shown us that people at all points of the socioeconomic spectrum have an immense range of skills and abilities. On any given day on TikTok, you can see people with skills that astonish you. People who may be struggling to pay rent that month, not for lack of effort or aptitude, but simply because they are living the experience of the global majority. This is all a long way of saying that talent is not rare. Talented people are all around you every day. The person bagging your groceries may be a killer electric guitar player in their downtime. The server at the restaurant where you just had lunch may be an aerial gymnast when not at work. Everyone has talent. For me, as an artist, I feel like talent is the jumping-off point. Figuring out you have a knack for something, or better yet, a passion for it, that's where you begin. The fun part is developing that talent and passion into a real craft. There are many different ways to define craft, but I like to think of it as a process one works through to make sure that they're getting the best results from their talents. Talent is raw and unfiltered. It flows out almost effortlessly. Craft is refined and measured and carefully considered. It's the way you learn to really make your talent shine. My guest today is a woodworker and television creator who has made a life out of being a true craftsman, putting his personal stamp on the things he creates and being careful and deliberate in the ways he chooses to utilize his talents. You may know him from TV shows like Fixer Upper, Against the Grain, Woodwork, and Restoration Road. He's joining me today to talk about what it is he puts into his work and why, and what craft means to him. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to Clint Harp about craft. How long have you been doing your show, your podcast?
Yeah, for sure. So, I started my podcast, I think it was like maybe 6 months ago, or I started the idea, I think almost like a year ago. And then I finally jumped into it and said, let's do this. And had kind of this weird, I just had this idea as I was like running along one day, which is where I usually have any one of my ideas is when I'm working out. Mm-hmm. And so I was on a run, great run, super sweaty, which is like dream scenario for me, hot outside and just pouring sweat, got good music going through the headphones. I don't know about you, Austin, but I generally view life as a music video. So,
oh yeah.
I had a feeling you might like that. So, and relate. So ever since I've been little, I just like everything to me, I just imagine I'm in a music video. So anyways, I'm rolling along. It feels like a music video. And then I just had, it was very soon after Ruth Bader Ginsburg had passed. And I had just thought of like, what if I started a podcast and just did this thing where it was like, I'm just going to put myself in the student's chair and listen to women and be a small ounce of the change that I'd like to see in our world, which is where, we go to women for advice. We look to them as the experts that they are. We live in this patriarchal world and, I don't know if I'm not going to necessarily, no one needs me, like the women don't need me. No one needs my help. But I just thought, why not do something where, I'm flipping the script and I'm doing it in the way that I would like to see it happen. And so I created Man Unmade and the idea was, normalizing the authority and power of women's voices in a man's ear.
Damn, that's a fantastic idea for a show. I like to have a wide breadth of different people on my show, and I like to try to make sure I'm getting different perspectives and representing different perspectives and different gender identities and racial breakdowns and intersections and things like that. But I really like that idea of just being like,
thank you.
I'm just going to focus in on boosting up a signal from one particular
absolutely. And within that is just this, we've had so many amazing people on already, which has just been incredible. Started out with my wife and then interviewed my aunt who's been a flight attendant for over 40 years, which was a great conversation. She's so hilarious.
It better start off with your wife.
That's exactly right. And she was a two-parter. Don't worry.
You get a year into the show, she's like, so are you going to talk to me on any episode? You're like, oh, do you want to be on the show? Like, do you have something to say? I don't know. I was just trying to talk to interesting women. I don't know.
You talk? Okay. Wow.
Okay, that's sure. Interesting. I guess you want to talk about like the kids or something? I don't know. I don't know what you do.
Okay. 20 years later and all of a sudden you have all this stuff to say. Fantastic. Wonderful.
What does your wife do, by the way?
My wife, what does she not do at this point? Yeah. She's just incredible. The most amazing partner I could ever ask for. She's part owner with me of our business, Harp Design Co. Mm-hmm. And then, mother of our three kids. And then, she's a master's student. She's getting her master's in psychology.
Wow.
So she's doing that, at the same time. And, so she's designing with Harp Design Co and all this different stuff. She's, learning all the time. When she's not getting her master's, she's like deep into some book, which is like amazing. She's really the more learned person, Austin. You should be talking to her. I really know none of the things.
She's next.
She's she should be. She's incredible. Has a, you know, really loud, loud's not really the appropriate word probably, but just she has been vocal, I should say, through her social media accounts throughout the last couple of years, speaking up, you know, against all the stuff that's been going on, and, you know, standing up for the oppressed as that, you know, as she can. And I don't even know how to say that the right way. Cause again, you know, I don't think she feels like anybody, she knows no one needs her, but you know, she wants to use her voice in the most positive way that she possibly can. And enough's enough. You know, I think your latest Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh my
god. Gloves off.
Just shut the fuck up.
Yeah. You know, I struggled with that, dude, cuz I
did you? Because it seemed like it just flowed effortlessly.
Well, the song was easy to write. The song did flow effortlessly. I've sort of been in this space lately with these people where I've been like, I feel like I keep finding clever ways to respond or retort. Yeah. And lately I've just been like, you know what? Shut the fuck up. I just, I'm just done. I'm done trying. I'm done trying to like make some kind of clever argument or just shut the fuck up. And especially people like Greg Locke and stuff. And I know that like my Mormon family are not going to love that. And I know that there's people that I grew up with who like support what I do, who are probably going to be like, oh, I don't like it when you scream shut the fuck up in a song. But I going along with what you were talking about with what your wife does and trying to be vocal, it comes at a cost. It really does. I don't think I realize this, that once you start getting a little bit of an audience, like if you're gonna speak up about stuff, you're gonna have to be prepared for what that means in your comment section and what you know and what that, and it's like I can mostly deal with it, and I block a lot of people, and I just kind of like I shut stuff down a lot if I see someone who's coming in with something that I think is particularly vile. But also sometimes, like when it comes to like whether or not a person accepts just basic science and stuff like that, I just am like, I shut the fuck up. You shouldn't
be anymore.
Yeah, I can't. I can't. I don't have it. Your patience wears thin. You know, I'm sure you've experienced some of that, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, because look, I've said this before on my podcast many times, and just in conversations with people, I'm someone that, my goodness, I don't care what side of the aisle you sit on. Yeah. I don't, you know, it just, it's like Republican, Democrat, whatever. I think, you know, historically there have been very good people on both sides of the aisle and everything. But things are reaching a point though. That's just like, okay, you know, come on. I like everybody can have their own opinions. I don't expect you to be a Democrat. I don't expect you to be a Republican. I don't expect you to be a moderate. I don't expect you to be anything except yourself. But at some point, people, come on. Like we are politicizing a vaccine. We're politicizing masks. We're, you know, we're not listening to science, you know, and I know people know better. They know better, Austin. They got to. And it's just, we've reached this allowance, you know, in our society now for just absurdity. And absurdity used to be mostly, you know, kind of held intact by late night comedians and I don't know, the comics. And now it's politics and it's very important people and their voices, and it just, the absurdity is allowed. And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. It's kind of
what
normalized.
Is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
News people who, you know, I mean, I don't consider these people really reputable news people, but they the people who watch them see them as a newsman or a woman.
Sure.
You're sitting behind a desk looking official, reporting the news, and you're just saying ridiculous things, just insane things,
and not true.
Yeah, not true things, and things that are easily easily verifiable as lies. And you're also contradicting yourself on a night-to-night basis. Like, if you if you watch your show, it's like, oh, but last night you were saying that immigrants were coming in with COVID and that we need to be worried about these immigrants that are coming in because they're all COVID positive. And tonight you're saying COVID's not a big deal because it has a 99% survival rate, so why is everyone freaking out about COVID? But, like, you're the one who said last night that the immigrants have COVID. So, and it's, you know, like you were saying, it's like, we politicize these things that shouldn't be political. And I talk about this all the time, that, like, I sort of accidentally became a political content creator because I don't think, I don't think of a lot of the positions that I take as inherently political positions. They seem like humanistic positions and just sort of like, well, we should be concerned about palpable harm done to human life, and we should be trying to minimize harm. And if people are dying and we can prevent deaths from happening by just sort of like taking medicine, we should do that. And it doesn't seem political to me. But
when you see like some lady speaking up in front of some Senate hearing or whatever, and she's like trying to get a spoon to like stick to the side of her face because she believes that like we're being magnetized by the vaccine, you're like, oh my God, what?
Right.
What is happening?
Right.
So now it is political, and it's like, this shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And you know as well as I, if a Democrat was saying it, you'd be speaking up against them too, because it's not about a side. It's just about like, guys, come on.
Yeah. Don't do this again. Okay. We're back.
There we go.
A few weeks ago, I was doing an episode on Zoom, and my microphone kept dropping out. And it just did it right now. It came back though. Hopefully that's the only one. And it's not indicative that that's going to happen more and more.
No worries.
So, okay. You got the podcast going on. I think this is a really cool, idea for a podcast. And I applaud you for doing that. But you kind of like your wife, you said, what doesn't she do? You're also a man of many hats and trades, and you know, you're a craftsman. Like you've been around. You've had, I think, a lot of different jobs. And how do you, like, what were you doing before you got into television? Before you got into doing this stuff on TV? How did you find your way into that whole world?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I tried so many different things. Did you say you were Mormon?
I was Mormon. Yeah, I was raised Mormon.
Okay, so you understand, like, you know, missions and all that kind of stuff. I mean, at one point in my life, Kelly and I were missionaries in Paris, France.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we've done so many different things, and I was a janitor, I was a youth minister, I was a account rep, I was director of operations, I was a sales guy, and that was the last thing that I was doing right before I became a full time carpenter. And the sales world it woke me up. I finally was like, oh, wow. So yeah, I'm definitely not living the life that I ever wanted to live.
Yeah.
And even when I got into sales, I knew I didn't want to do sales, but I thought I was supposed to grow up and make a lot of money because I had a kid now and I needed to be a big boy. And so that's what you do, right? You get a job and you have benefits and you know, 401k and all this stuff. And so I was doing the sales thing and, you know, just began to wake up over the course of a couple of years. I ended up doing it for 4 years, but over the course of a couple of years, I woke up and realized I don't want to do this with my life ever. And what do I want to do? And so I began to just, you know, really search deep. And I actually met with a therapist, kind of a life coach, whatever, for a couple of years. And every other Monday, he and I would meet and just talk and cry. And I would just dig and dig and dig. And what kept coming back to me was how much I loved growing up and working with my hands and building things. I was around my grandfather, my mom's dad, who built houses, he built furniture, he was a craftsman as well. And he also, beyond that, Austin, he just had his own life. Like, he did what he wanted to do. He did it daily and he enjoyed it. And he was always outside working with his hands. He was on a bulldozer, clearing land, whatever. And so I got to be around that. And he let me, you know, put my hands on tools that I really had no business putting them on at, you know, at a young age, and driving big machinery and stuff like that. And I just loved it. And there's something about me that likes to put my hand to the plow, that likes to be working at something, you know? And so I really just, as I dug deeper and deeper, I realized that's really all I've ever wanted to do, was just kind of put my hand to something that I really love and do that daily. And I think my way into that life is through carpentry. And because I've always wanted to build furniture, and I've always wanted to build my own life. And so that's what I did. And so in May of 2011, I quit my job in sales. I was six-figure job. And we had two kids at the time, and we lived in Houston. And Kelly and I just agreed, okay, we're going to do it. And so I quit. And
what was it about that specifically? Did you feel like you kind of had to be a little bit like maybe aggressive or pushy with people in sales in a way that you weren't comfortable with ethically or?
Yeah. You know, so sales is a thing, and it's a wonderful thing. And, I know a lot of people who are really good at it. For me, I was good at it, but it was killing my soul.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason, I was in medical sales, and I think there are people who can split this out and can look at it in different ways and healthier ways. But for me, I was unable to not look at patients, people who are sick, and see a dollar sign over their head. And when that became like a thing, I was like, ooh, I'm out. This is not good. I can't see people in that way. It's just not, that's not my jam. Again, I want to be really clear. I think there's people that are able to do that and separate that out. And they know that in their heart, they're helping people. The product that I was, providing for people, it is a good product, and it really and truly helps people, that it's not a bad thing. But for me, I couldn't separate the two out, and it was just too soul crushing for me. So I just said, I got to get out. So that was back into it. That was kind of it. I mean, I really felt like this is a world for somebody else, and they're going to be able to take this and do this as well as it can possibly be done in this market. But for me, I need to get out of it. And so I did. And
kind of sounds like you've got an artist spirit as well too. And that you you're one of those people who's not going to be really satisfied with what you're doing if it doesn't have some component of like creativity and getting to map out what it is that you want to make and going through the process of sort of seeing an idea from inception of the idea through writing out the plans to the building of it to the, that whole process, the creative process of actually getting to see an idea that you have come to life. Like that's probably something that you felt like, you needed. Yeah.
Oh, you just nailed it. That's funny. That's very insightful. You nailed it. That is me to the core. And even when I was doing sales, I was like trying to come up with things that it's like, hey, let's do these things where like we, hand out stuff, and instead of just handing out like candy to nurses and everything else, let's hand out something and it has like a picture of our pharmacist back in the office and in the lab, and it's like, let's take a really good picture of him, and then like they can get to know him, and we'll have a little blurb, and like whatever his favorite candy is, that's what we'll give. And he'd be like, hey, my name is Terrence, I'm the pharmacist here, and my favorite thing to snack on when I'm not in the pharmacy is Snickers, or whatever, and blah blah blah. And like, even in that, I had to be doing like, it wasn't just like, Clint, would you just shut up and go take some brownies to the hospital and make sure that they, I like had to like create this whole thing and a production, and I wanted it to be, I was trying to really change the game. So you're exactly right. I mean, I've got to feel like I'm creating something. I definitely feel like I am now. That's for sure.
I mean, I see, what a creative pursuit it is. My brother, is a very handy man, kind of like you. He knows how to build things. He knows, he can, his passion is sort of, taking apart and rebuilding homes and things like that. Like he likes looking at a house and going, oh, I know what I would do. I'd take this wall down. I'd open that up. I'd pop that, like, and so he's always doing that. And he'll always talk to me when I release stuff. I'll release songs and stuff, and he'll be like, how do you do this? And I'll be like, it's the same way you do it. I just practiced it. I just figured it out. I figured out the process. I figured out all the tools I need and what the blueprint looks like and what the process is of going through idea through but like you just know how to do it with your tools and with your stuff, but like it's the same stuff being done of just, he sees, looks in a room, knows what he wants to turn it into, knows what he wants to put it in, sees it in his head, then cool, what do I need? What are the materials I need? Yeah. Let's draw it up, then let's go through the process. And that's that process is kind of what he lives for. And I imagine it's the same for you, that you like going through that process and then rinse, lather, repeat.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, a lot of people will ask me actually, hey, are you getting to build anything now that you're making this television show and traveling all across the country and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I get to build stuff all the time, but it's not always furniture.
Yeah.
You know, you know, when I was answering your question earlier, you know, I'm careful to answer that question in a way that allows people to know, or at least try to communicate that when I quit my job, yes, I was going to build furniture, but I was also trying to create a life where I was building things. I was building my own life. I was building my future, you know, and creating a world that Kelly and I, you know, we were creating one together that we really believed in. And, you know, I think you can sit back and wait forever for things to happen, or you can go, you know what, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to make it happen. And so that's what we really wanted to do. So yes, I'm still making furniture, but I'm also making a television show. That's creative.
Yes,
I'm making a podcast. That's creative. You know, so it's like that's where I really thrive, is when I'm getting to create, you know, new things and try new things, and sometimes they stick, sometimes they don't, and you know, that's one of the biggest barriers to entry for I think a lot of people, is that moment of realizing, oh shit, this might not work. And so you just don't try it because you're afraid of what it will look like when it doesn't work and when people don't like it. And I think there was just some point for me in my life where I was just like, man, fuck it, whatever. I'm just going to do it. You know, like I'm just going to go for it. And if people don't like it, people don't like it, you know, and I don't like to fail, but I mean, I just realized that that's just going to happen. I wanted to be a musician, man. I look at your stuff and you talk about, you know, making music, and oh, I'm jealous. That was my life. I was doing music for years and years and years. Could never write a song. I don't have that melody inside me that needs to get out. I think that there are people who are just born with melodies that need to get out. I'm not one of them. I can sing, but that's it, you know?
I'm too afraid to use power tools. I loved woodshop in middle school. I made like a bat, and I remember I liked smoothing it on the lathe, you know, sanding it down, making it all smooth. But then, and when I did theater in high school and college, and in college we had to try to learn all the disciplines of the theater. So I had to like help build sets and stuff like that, you know? But every time it came to, they give me a piece of wood and they go, okay, you know, cut this out to these dimensions on the saw. It gave me so much anxiety using big saws, big tools. I was always just like, I'm going to be the person that slices their thumb off. Like, I know it. It's going to get stuck, or like a piece of the wood's going to shoot backwards and get lodged in my eye. And I still, to this day, I've helped my brother out on a couple things, and I'm just like, this stuff makes me nervous. I don't know.
Yeah, as so, it should.
Yeah.
it's meant to take things away, not put it back. So, your anxiety is very justified.
How'd you, so you've got a TV show right now that you're doing, but the first show that you did was on HGTV, right? The first show that you did was
Fixer Upper.
How did you wind up on that? How'd that come about?
Yeah, I quit my job and jumped in the garage, and then Kelly was like, hey, I'm gonna go and get my master's now. And I was like, great. So we have no money. I don't know how you're going to get there, but fantastic. Go apply for something, you know, and you'll get a full ride, I'm sure, because you're really smart. And she did. She applied and got a full ride at Baylor in Waco. Yeah. And so it was in American Studies. So that's your first tip there, that tip off, I guess, that she didn't stick with it because now she's doing psychology. Mm-hmm. But it started as American Studies at Baylor, and that's what got us here. So we sold our house in Houston and packed up our two kids at the time, moved into an apartment next to campus at Baylor, and Kelly started going to school. I volunteered with Jimmy Habitat for Humanity because I was just about to say I volunteered with Jimmy Carter, which I guess in a way I did, but
Jimmy Carter's thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
My grandmother years ago used to work for Jimmy Carter at the Carter Presidential Library in Atlanta. And so he's always been near and dear to our family, and actually called my grandmother, you know, just weeks before she died to say goodbye. And when she was on her deathbed. And so there's always, you know, kind of been a history there. And so when I moved here, I heard that they had a good chapter, and I was like, you know, this is a cool way for me to kind of give back to the Carters and be a part of something that I really love and admire. And I'm working with tools. I don't have a shop yet. So this will kind of like keep me in the building phase and whatnot. And eventually, hopefully I'll get a shop.
Yeah.
So I came here to Waco. We were doing life and I volunteered, like it was a full-time job Monday through Friday with Habitat. And after doing that for like 4 months, I ran out of money. And, you know, we had this dream and it was like, part of this ridiculous dream was I was going to volunteer for Habitat and look for a shop. Well, I never found a shop. Volunteering obviously doesn't pay.
Yeah.
So,
noble, though. It's noble.
No, it's noble. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And, ran out of money. And so I was like, ah, crap. What do I do? And I just had this horrible day, where I decided, you know, I was just going to drive to this abandoned house and park my car and sit there and just cry my eyes out for a while. Mm. And so I did, and I called Kelly and I was like, Kelly, this is horrible. Like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, well, I'll tell you what, let's just go to the park. And I was like, oh, okay, great. I should go apply for a job somewhere, but sure, let's go to the park. So we go to the park and we play with our kids for a little bit and we hang out, we get back in the car and I turn the car on and the gas light comes on. It's like, you need gas. We have no money. And I'm like, ah, crap. You know, like, yeah. Great. Of course the gas light would come on. And so I go and I get gas at this gas station right down the street. Well, rewind the tape. 4 months prior, we just moved to Waco. We had dinner with some friends and the husband was like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm hopefully going to have a shop one day. But until then I'm volunteering with Habitat. And he was like, well, I'll tell you what, when you're ready to get a shop, you should call this guy Chip. And his name's Chip Gaines, and you should call him and leave him, you know, or talk to him. And he knows a lot of people in town and he probably help you find a shop. So I said, great. So I called this guy, he didn't pick up. I left him a message and that was that. I didn't hear from him for 4 months. Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to, we've just gone to the park. We're at the gas station. It's 4 months later. We're sitting there and the tank is filling up and this black truck pulls in front of me as we're waiting for the tank to fill up. And on the side of the truck, it said Magnolia. And Magnolia, I was like, wait, Kelly, isn't that the name of that company of the guy that I called like 4 months ago or whatever? And his name was Chip or something. And he could help me find a shop. And she was like, yeah, I think so. And I was like, you know what? Let's throw a Hail Mary. Why not?
Yeah.
You know? And she was like, okay. So I got out of the car and the dude was parked right on the other side of the same pump as me. And this guy is standing there and I said, hey, my name's Clint. And I was calling cause you don't know me. I'm fumbling all over my words. And I'm like, anyways, I was looking for some guy named Chip. I think he works for y'all. And I was looking for a shop. I'm a carpenter. I'm working for Habitat for Humanity. You know, it's just like this weird, who is this guy? And he stops me and he's like, oh, I'm Chip. And I was like, oh, well, perfect. This is the deal. And wow. So we start talking and he's like, hey, I'll tell you what, why don't you take your family home and meet me at my shop and we'll hang out. I was like, great. So later that afternoon, I went to a shop after taking my family home, got in his truck and we drove around Waco for 3 hours just talking. And in that conversation, kind of getting to know each other, he kept mentioning his wife, Joanna, who wanted to add some handmade furniture to her product line. And I was like, that's exactly what I want to do. That's perfect. And he's like, yeah. Well, come over for dinner in a couple nights. And so we did. I came over and with my family, we had dinner with them and I met Joe and she talked about, you know, some furniture ideas and some stuff like that. And I was like, great. She was like, could you build this? If I just wrote it down on a piece of paper and sketch it out, could you just build some stuff? And I was like, yeah, sure. Now I had no shop. My tools were in storage. I had no lumber to speak of. It's like, yeah. But I'm going, yeah, absolutely. Sure. I can do that.
Yeah.
And so I went like the next day, I think back to Habitat and I was like, hey guys, I finally got somebody that I need to build some furniture for it. Do you have a shop? Now I've got no money. And they're the president or the director of Habitat at the time, John, who's now a dear friend of mine. He said, yeah, we've actually got a shop and we're phasing it out and we don't need it anymore. It's 1600 square feet. And I'm like, oh crap, there's no way I can afford that, you know? And he's like, I tell you what, I'll rent it to you for, I don't know, how about $25 a month?
Oh.
And I was like, I'm sorry, did you say 25? And yeah, so I started renting out this shop for $25 a month from Habitat for Humanity, this place I felt like I should go and volunteer with because my grandmother used to work for Jimmy Carter. You know,
yeah, just like, wow.
Whatever. And then that was March or April of 2012. And in October of that year, I've been, you know, building some stuff for Joe and some other folks around town finally at that point. And around October of that same year, Joe comes into the shop one day and she says, hey, we got this call. Some folks at HGTV want to make a television show about us. And the rest is kind of history.
Wow. What a yeah. story. My God. It's nice.
That's the abbreviated version.
I mean, yeah. And that's fantastic. I always like, what a little bit of discomfort and desperation can do for people. Being at the gas station, yep. out of money, filling up on gas, you see Magnolia on the truck and it's like, you know what? What do I got to lose? You know, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
What's the worst that's going to happen if I walk over to this guy? He's going to say, I have no idea who you are. Sorry. Best of luck to you and get this car and drive away. Okay. All right. You know, so I might as well walk over here and just see. But it's like that stuff doesn't always happen if you're not kind of desperate for it. If you're not, sometimes that discomfort and that, you know, now sometimes being too desperate in a job interview situation can be a detriment, but sometimes it's that discomfort and that hunger that will push us to go and take a swing at something that maybe we otherwise wouldn't have.
100%. Yeah, totally.
That's so cool. I want to talk to you a little bit about just the idea of craft. I feel like you had this opportunity to make a lot of money being a salesman. You probably would have been a good salesman. You're a gregarious person and a charismatic person. But you're more drawn to, you know, creative arts and things like that. I feel like there's a few things with people who are drawn to this stuff and people who have kind of an artist spirit. And it's like maybe a little bit of maybe a little bit of talent, maybe a little bit of like, you know, you tried this stuff out as a kid and you're like, I'm actually pretty good at it. I'm pretty good at drawing, or I got a nice singing voice or something like that. You worked with your grandpa in his shop and made some things and said, you know what? I got a pretty steady hand for this stuff. So maybe there's a little bit of that, but I feel like outside, there's also something just spiritually, the way that certain people are called to, be an athlete or go into medicine or something like that. There's something that calls out to people. And it feels like it was for you that you just had this drive to be moving in this direction. And I feel like the universe has validated that drive for you and all of these things that have come to pass. But on top of all of that, like once you decide, okay, this is what I'm doing, it becomes important to develop some sense of craft. And I'm wondering, I talk to people about this sometimes, like, what does that mean to you specifically to be a good craftsman in what you do, not just in making furniture, but in building the show and building the podcast and how you approach your life as a husband and a father? And
I think it's a great question. Thank you. You know, I do think it bleeds over into all those different areas. And I've certainly... not the expert on it. What my experience has been for me is that craft is doing something the way that you want to do it and believing that there is something unique inside of you that the world will never hear, will never see, will never taste, will never whatever unless you do it. And you know, there's nothing wrong with modeling something that you're doing after somebody else. We're all inspired by other people. I've said many times in making my show, I think a lot about the late great Anthony Bourdain, who I totally admired as a host and a TV producer. I, you know, personally, I didn't know him, but
yeah,
what he put on the television screen, I totally admired. And, you know, and I certainly think about that when I'm making my television show and am inspired by that. There's work that craftsmen and craftswomen have done over the years that has inspired me and whatever. That being said, when I get on the lathe and I start turning a candlestick or whatever, I don't want to look at anything else.
Yeah.
I've seen what I've seen. It's not that I'm not going to look at stuff in the future, but when I start doing my craft, I just try and put everything out of my mind and just do that thing that I want to turn. And what's so fun is like, then I'll have somebody else in my shop. You know, we'll have, there was one time this girl, she started working for us and she was like, hey, could I learn the lathe? And I was like, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Here's kind of the basics. And she learned it. And a couple days later, she like comes in and she like turned this little snowman thing, this little ornament that was like so cool. And like, we still sell them to this day. And like, I didn't think of that. No one else thought. She just kind of got on the lathe and she just made it. And it just came from her. That was her idea. And we wouldn't have had it if she hadn't have done it, you know? And so for me, that's what I love about craft is, you know, we're not going to see it if you don't do it. Austin, your, you know, your humor, the songs that you write, the content that you're creating, you know, it's so unique and it is so wonderful and it is lovely and funny. And if you cannot take yourself too seriously, it'll probably, my little computer light just fell. That was the crashing noise there. those suction cups sucked. That was a horrible joke. And I wasn't even trying to make it. It was really bad. That was so bad. I'm such a dad. Wow. Anyways. But you're all the stuff that you do, I mean, is so great in it. And I haven't seen it before. I don't look at your content and go, oh wow, he looks like this. Or, oh wow, I can kind of sense this, you know, comedian or whatever. I'm like, no, that's just Austin.
See, that's funny because
and I love that
because to me I feel like my work is incredibly derivative, but that's because I know who my influences are, just like you're talking about Anthony Bourdain. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, there's some people in my comments sometimes, like I like to emulate different styles of people that I like. I recently did a sketch that was very like, I was like deliberately emulating Tim Robinson, who has this show on Netflix called I Think You Should Leave, and a lot of people in the comments were like, oh, this is like Tim Robinson, and I'm like, yeah for sure. But it's I'm okay with people picking up on influences and stuff like that, and
oh, sure.
And I'm okay with homaging to people in my work. And I that song that I just put out that we were talking about, Shut the Fuck Up, someone in the comments said this sounds like a Ben Folds song, and I was like, thank you for picking that up. I'm not I was trying to sound like Ben Folds in that song, because I was like, this yeah. Ben Folds would write that song. First of all, he would write a song that's like a kind of a fun piano pop sound, but the lyrics are all just shut the fuck up. That is the kind of song he would write. And so I styled it after him, and I was impressed that someone picked that up. And I don't really get bothered if people notice it, but I also like what you're saying about, cause I get a lot of comments on my live streams. Sometimes I'll do live streams where I'll just talk about songwriting and stuff. And aspiring songwriters will say stuff like, do you freeze up when, or get discouraged when you feel like everything you're writing sounds like something else, you know? And I always say, absolutely not. Cause first of all, there's only so many notes on a keyboard and on a guitar. There's only so many chords.
Right.
There's only so many
right.
structures that exist for putting a song into. You can try to be completely avant-garde and off the wall and outsider art and completely redefine what a song is, and go ahead by all means. I love that stuff too. But if you're going to write a traditional verse chorus song, there chances are you're going to be pulling from some influences that you've seen in your life.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because
at
the core of it, what's actually going to happen is, even if you're trying to emulate this or that, you're not going to be able to help being yourself. It is if you're coming from a place of truth and what you were talking about, working on the lathe and forgetting everything else, and it's sort of this meditative state that takes over where really living in your truth, you know, you're really living in what is intellectually and spiritually honest for you to do in the world. And if you're in that state, even if you're pulling from influences and trying to emulate people that have inspired you, what comes out is going to be quintessentially you. It's going to be, whether you want it to or not. Like, I can't really help but sound like myself. I can't, you know, even if I try my hardest to emulate some comedian or some songwriter, someone might hear the influence, but it's still going to be inextricably me.
You know who's a great example of that is Ray LaMontagne.
Yeah.
I think Ray is just one of the best singer songwriters that of our generation. Like, I mean, he's just absolutely incredible. And yet, like, come on, you can't hear some Joe Cocker in there. You know what I mean? Like, there's some influences in there. It's just going to happen. That's just, you know, Bon Iver, you know, Justin Vernon, like there's not a lot that sounds like him, but if you were to listen hard enough, you would probably hear something. Are you watching McCartney 321 on Hulu by any chance?
No, but I've seen the previews for it with him and Rick Rubin, and they're
so good. So good. Yeah. And what's so cool is to hear McCartney, Paul's standing there going, well, there was this French singer, you know, and she had this note. I saw her at a club or something or whatever. I heard one of her songs and she had this really weird note, and it was just the note just stuck in my head. And so I wanted to stick it in this song. And so, you know, you hear Michelle, my belle. And it's like, and he's like, hear that note? That's it. That's her. He points it out. The whole show is him like kind of, you know, letting us in on some of those processes and inspirations. And I just thought, I was like, that's so cool, you know, and it's art building on art, building on art. And
yeah,
you know, you have been inspired, informed and, you know, influenced by so many different people. And yet what you're creating, it would not be out there. Like it's only you can make it. And that's a really sweet spot to be in. And, you know, I'm jealous because you're getting to do it with music, you know, and that was always kind of my dream. But then people are jealous of me because they're like, hey, I would love to build stuff every day. And so I'm really, really lucky. I mean, it's a cool thing. I've got a book right over here behind me of the carpenter Sam Maloof. He's no longer with us. He's one of the OGs. He's, you know, the goats of carpentry, and the guy could just make the most amazing things. I really don't emulate my stuff after him at all. It would be an honor if anyone ever saw anything that I bought and they're like, ooh, that has some Maloof to it. I'd be like, thank you very much.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So
I know I've met artists before who get a little miffed when people compare them to something and they're like, I'm not like that person. Yeah. I've met people like that and I'm like, it's okay. Maybe it was totally unintentional. I have people all the time say artists who I've never heard of. They'll go, oh, you sound a lot like this guy. And I'll be like, oh, I don't know who that is. But I think that's so interesting that there's someone in the world who's doing this, who you've heard both of our music and you think that we sound like each other. And I think that's interesting. But it's like, you didn't invent the idea of a chair. Like you didn't... Yeah. You know, like you didn't invent the idea of like a chest to store things in or a dresser.
I got this wonderful idea.
Yeah, right. You know, but you can make it in a way that someone will be able to look at. And especially once you build up a body of work, maybe what craft is, maybe your an individual's craft is sort of the accent that they put on the work that they do. Because I like this sort of definition you're running with, that it's like the way that your craft is the way that you make it. Because once you have a body of work, once you have several pieces that you've built, suddenly people can start going, ah, I see, that's a Clint Harp. I can see that. I can see there's a way that he likes to do this accent.
Example of that. I just turned these spindles for a staircase, and there were just four, and they're really, really short and whatnot, and pretty simple. But I did them the way that I like to do them, which is by hand, no template. I don't have a jig, like a copying jig. So it'll literally just like follow the pattern and like turn it exactly the same. And, when I'm done with those four spindles, which will actually be my next Instagram post, I'm horrible at social media. Another thing I'm jealous of is how good you are and others are at it. I'm like so bad at it. But anyways,
well, you got a good following on there. So
hey, you know. Thanks. Yeah. Well, you know, thank you, Fixer Upper, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But anyways, so I, you know, I, but I took a picture of these, you know, four spindles. And the thing that I love about those and what I would want people to go, oh yeah, that's a Clint Harp, is each one's different because I did them by hand. I, you know, I'm looking at the first one. I have the first one literally like propped up in front of me. And I have measurements to know exactly where I cut in for certain things, you know, because I want it to generally be the same, but I'm not even using calipers or anything to like, you know, measure how thick one turning is or one cut in is, you know, or what in. I'm literally just eyeballing it. And do you know what has been the most gratifying thing, Austin? I mean, like, I kid you not. So with my new show, I'm going around the country and I'm looking at all these like, you know, old 1700s, 1800s barns, you know, and log cabins and things like this.
Yeah, you're looking at like restorations and stuff, right?
Totally. Yeah. It's literally called Restoration Road. And so like I'm looking at all these things, and so many times I will go into these places and there'll be a staircase or there'll be something, and you can tell that when they turned that in the 1700s, they did them all by hand.
Of course,
you can see little, of course, and in little variations. And like this little turning was a little bit thicker than the one next to it. And this one was a little higher than the other one. You know, there are little things and you can just look at it and go, oh yeah. And I just, oh, I get bubbly. I get so excited because that's how I do it.
Is there anything in this room behind you that you made? Like that chair behind you over your right shoulder, did you make that?
No, I didn't make that. That though.
Okay.
I did that painting. I'm not a painter.
Oh,
but I have it there. You can't really see, what it is. But it is, I just bought the biggest canvas I could fit in my car and I wrapped it in some reclaimed wood for the frame and then put a piece of reclaimed wood across the bottom. You can see it there.
Sweet.
And then I taped it all the wood up. And then I just went to town and just started like painting all over it. And there was no form or function on it. I'm not a painter. And one day I was just staring at it. And this like this face, you know, like when you stare at clouds, like shapes. And it was like, I saw this shape and it was like a young man's, you know, kind of the profile of his face kind of popped out. And so I just sort of highlighted that with some yellow paint and then right there at the bottom, you can't see it, is a quote from an old song that my soul, hold on, yeah, just want to make sure I got it right. My soul looks back and I wonder how I got over, which is also the Roots. I think they used that lyric in a song that they did or an album. But so that's it. And I hung it up in my room. So I made it. I've not really painted anything else since. But it was really fun to do. It was a great creative experience. And you know, people look at it and they don't know what the hell it is, but I do. And it's fun.
It's got a Mark Rothko vibe. I don't know if anyone's ever said that to you, but like just sort of the deep use of color. And then with the,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Do you know who Mark Rothko is?
You know, I've heard the name Rothko, but if you would have told me, you know, Rothko, I wouldn't have been able to say artist.
It's like what we were just talking about. Like someone goes, oh, that looks like one of these people. You're like, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Great. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, hey, this has been, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy guy and you do a lot of different things. And, I hope people check out your podcast, Man Unmade, and, either watch the show on Discovery Plus or I guess wait till it gets to Original Recipe Television on DIY.
Yeah.
This has just been really, really cool. It's nice to get to know you a little bit and chat, talk shop with you.
Listen, Austin, when you reached out and said, you know, I think I DM'd you or something on Instagram about something you made and you were like, hey, would you ever want to be on my podcast? It's like, yes, I'd be honored because you are just awesome. I can't tell you how much I love your stuff. The other day when I saw that, I think it was like Brene Brown. Didn't she like retweet something that,
did.
That you did yeah. or commented or something? And I was like, hell yes, Austin, that's awesome. Cause she's incredible. Yeah. Like people are watching and I am one of them. I'm deeply encouraged and inspired. And, you know, we live in heavy, heavy times where there is so much confusion and so much just like, what in the world is going on? And there have been some voices that have really helped me, helped my wife, and helped many others get through. And yours is one of them for sure. So thank you. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. It's
what
an honor to get to talk
to
you.
Wow.
I mean it. I truly mean it. You are hilarious. And keep it up because you're doing awesome stuff and encouraging a lot of people, whether you know it or not. You are. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks, man. I really, really appreciate that. And I hope we chat soon, and I hope you have a productive and full rest of your day and week.
Yeah. Same to you. Yeah. Cheers to this not being the last time. Hope
yeah.
to talk to you again.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Sincerely. All right, so that's Clint Harp. Great guy. It's always really cool when I can meet people like that, that just people that like I didn't ever think I would meet. I never watched the show Fixer Upper and thought like, you know, I bet one day me and Clint Harp are going to be talking on Zoom about craft. It's not that I didn't think that was I could dream that big to talk to Clint Harp. I think Clint Harp comes off on TV as a very approachable, kind person. He is a very approachable, kind person. It's just not the kind of thing I would have, the kind of paths I would have seen crossing. But it's cool to talk to him, and he's a smart guy, great, very talented, interesting person to talk to. I want to talk to all of you. We're here on TikTok. The TikTok portion. We're back. We're back on TikTok. I'm in a fight right now with someone named Austin in the chat who spells his name Austen. And we're kind of arguing over whose name is spelled correctly. And it's obviously mine, but he's kind of like advocating for himself. And I get that. He's got to advocate for himself. But like, it's obviously that my name is spelled the correct way and that his parents didn't know how to spell it. And that's okay. That's all right. They were just trying to be creative and fun, you know, but like, it's very clear, who's on the correct side of this debate, but let's get into talking about craft. I want to know, what y'all think about craft. When you hear people, when you hear artists, when you hear, woodworkers, when you hear someone who has a passion, a skill, a hobby talking about craft, does it reek of pretension to you, or what does that mean to you? That's what I'm interested in talking about. Austin with a E, Austin says, I'm a craft artist. I want to know what you mean by that, Austin. And that's why I will refer to you as Austin. Lulu Bees. Hi, Lulu Bees says, I think ultimately craft is more essential to expertise than talent. Probably. I like that take, that probably if you want to become a master of something, if you, you know, like I would say Clint Harp is a master woodworker, you know, is a person who like you could commission Clint to make you a custom table that would blow people's minds when they come over to your house. But in order to become an expert, a master at that thing that you're talented at, you are going to have to develop a sense of craft. If you want to become, you know, an expert music producer, an expert script writer, you're going to have to do it many, many times and sort of hone a process and hone a system of operations that will kind of give you a mode of operating that sort of puts you in a higher tier of, I guess, of know-how, which also requires a lot of experimentation and trying out different things so that you sort of are schooled on the different methodologies that exist, you know, the different approaches, the different ways to attack a character in a script, the different ways to approach how to lay out a house or a building if you're an architect. something like that, you know? So craft is sort of that process of like becoming a master or becoming an expert, perhaps. Sweek Cheeks, like that name, says, so much is automated now. We take for granted the effort and skill that goes into making something. Yeah, for sure, you know? Clint talks about that in the episode, that he intentionally does things by hand because he likes the, that even if people don't necessarily notice it. So he talks about doing, say you're like crafting like the banister of a staircase, you know, and each individual, I don't know what they're called, like the spools that go, the in like the dowels that, that go, that line a staircase, what are those called? That if you make those all by hand, they're all going to have little individual markers that are going to set them apart from each other, and they're all going to be unique. Whereas if they were sort of mass-produced at like a factory or something and automated and being done by a machine that can do them, we have machines that can do this automated, they're not going to have that individual feel, that handmade feel. And that's not something that you can necessarily see. And I think this bleeds into a lot of different kinds of crafts where a car that someone restores by hand, an old car that someone takes into a garage and they rebuild that engine from scratch. Functionally, you might not really see the difference, but if it works, if it drives, it's a car. It's a car. But if you get in there and really like look at the guts of that thing and understand that like it, that real blood, sweat, and tears went into it, it's different than something that comes off of the assembly line. It just has a different energy in it, a different life force. And I think that I'd say that you can see that with movie studios. We'll put out movies and television studios. We'll put out things that are so formulaic, it feels like it comes off of an assembly line. There is a tried and true formula that they are following that basically is just there to make money. They need a product. They need a new TV show. They need a new movie in their lineup. And they pump out this factory one versus the thing that comes out of someone's personal need to tell that story, someone's deep connection to it, something that is really a true labor of love and a work of passion. And you can tell the difference between those two things. And hey, the assembly line movie or the assembly line TV show might work. It might be entertaining. It might have some good performances, some good moments. But you can feel the difference between that like personal cared for thing that has a sense of craft to it and that thing that was sort of made in the factory. TB Clay Studio says, I do think to be an, and in quotes, an artist, I'd expect great talent, but I also view artist as pretty prestige. What do you mean by that? You mean like the title of artist is like a prestige thing that maybe that's overused, that too many people identify as an artist, and to be an actual artist, you need to have some kind of status in society or be what qualifies someone to have the title of artist? Do they need to sell a certain amount of paintings or sell a certain amount of art before they are an official artist? I used to think that. I used to think like before I can tell someone I'm an actor, I need to be making money acting. I need to be paying my bills with the money I make acting. Then I can actually say when someone says, what do? I can say I'm an actor. I don't think that anymore. I think that in order to be a musician, an actor, an artist, you need to engage in that craft. I think you need to engage in the creation of that thing. I think you need to act. I think to be a writer, you need to write. I think to be a painter, you need to paint. I think to be a singer-songwriter, you need to sing and write songs. But I don't think that you need to sell those things to be valid. I don't think you need to be massively wealthy because of those things. I think that, you know, as long as you're doing them, do it, you know? And I don't see a lot of prestige with that, that it's just sort of like, anyone can do that. Anyone can do that. Adam's Apricot says, craft as a noun is a discipline. It is expertise. Making crafts is not equal to having a craft. Okay, I would say not the same, not necessarily not equal, because I don't necessarily want to give them like value judgments or like say like one is better than the other, but I can see how they're different. Yeah, engaging in like the hobby of making crafts. I'm going to sit down and make a bunch of custom placemats with some friends, and we're going to like we're going to have craft night for fun, you know. We're going to sit down and we're going to make snowmen with cotton balls and construction paper, and we're going to make crafts. Like, yeah, that's one thing. And having a craft, really truly having an expertise in something that you've spent time honing a craft, I think those are two different things. And I don't necessarily want to say that one is like morally better, that one has a higher value than something else. Interesting. Brave Dave says, I think being an artist is bridging the gap between personal expression and technique. Fascinating. So technique, let's say technique is craft in a word. Let's say that in a word, technique is craft. Like whatever that would, because the technique is sort of the system of tools and steps that you use to create the thing that you're creating. So like maybe I like to prime my canvas before I even touch it with a hint of color. I like to prime it, do the entire thing with some kind. Maybe I don't like that. Maybe I like the raw canvas better and it does something to the oil that I like more. Whatever technique I'm using, that is all a part of my craft. The space between what I'm trying to say as a person, my personal expression, and the technique, my craft, somewhere in there is where an artist is formed. I think that's fascinating. I think that's interesting. I don't know if I agree, but I like the way it's worded. 'Cause part of me kind of thinks like the term art, I feel like the term craft is easier to define than the term artist. I feel like the term craft is something that I can look at and go, yeah, no, craft is just however you're doing what it is that you're doing, whatever the process is that you figured out, the technique. Whereas artistry is just so much more ethereal and subjective. It's so much more like you sort of are if you are. You sort of are if you want to be, you know? People can be artists in all different kinds of ways. There's so many different ways that you can express through, and so I don't know. I don't know. I like that idea that it has to take some amount of both, some amount of like wanting to personally express something, but utilizing a sense of craft to express it, and then in the in-between, you find artistry, you become an artist. Lulu B says, I think also that the idea of craft is democratizing. Not all art needs to be high art. Definitely agree with that. Definitely agree with that. TB Clay Studio says, perhaps how well you execute those techniques and hone in on those skills to create the art. Again, I mean, so I see what you're saying there, but again, how well according to who, you know? That's the thing about art is I don't necessarily think that craft has anything to do with how well you're doing something. So we even talked about like how to become an expert, to become a master, that's what building craft is. So wouldn't an expert or a master be objectively someone who's good at it? Well, so what does good at it mean? I think that we could have a few different definitions. One could be that, like, you clearly can do it, you know? You clearly can do it. The other would be, is it effective to the person that you're, like, to the audience? Is the audience affected by it? And those things have really nothing to do with each other. I get comments from people sometimes on, like, I'll post, like, a video to, like, to YouTube, or even sometimes mostly I get these comments on YouTube for some reason, but even sometimes on TikTok, you know, I sing a lot. I have videos, I make music and I put it on the internet for people to enjoy. And people who are trying to hurt my feelings and discourage me will say stuff like, God, you're really, really bad at making music. Like, I get comments on YouTube that'll be like, I'm in the music industry and I just have to tell you, you're not good at this. Like, trust me, you're not good at making music. Like, you're not good at singing and you're not good at this. And don't worry, everyone out there. I obviously don't, like, I don't read that and go like, oh my God, I know what they're doing. I know that they're trying to, like, they're trying to hurt my feelings. But I'm self-aware enough to know that A, not everyone is going to like my music, and that's okay. That's totally fine. But B, that saying that I'm not good at it is just a lie. Like, that's just not true. So those two definitions of, like, what is good? A, can you clearly do the thing? Are you capable of using a lathe to sand a thing into a shape and be a woodworker? Can you do the thing? And B, is the thing effective? Those are two different things. So you can not like a song that I put out, but if you go, oh, you're not good at music, like, you don't know how to structure a song and make a song, I'm like, well, that's objectively not true. I obviously know how to do it. I obviously know how to structure a song. It's not hard. There are several different structures that people have been using for thousands of years for songs, and I just glom onto those. But, like, whether or not a person, and I don't take those comments to be sincere. I don't think that they're actually trying to express to me, like, oh, I don't, this isn't for me. This doesn't really land for me. This isn't effective for me. I think they're just trying to hurt my feelings. But I know that those people exist too, who, like, they listen to a song that I put out and they just go like, yeah, I'm not into it. It just doesn't, like, connect with me emotionally. It doesn't do anything for me. And that's fine. That's art. That's, someone's going to paint something and someone will see it and go, this is the most amazing painting I've ever seen. It really connects with me. I relate to it. This is, like, speaking to something that I can't really put my finger on. Someone else looks at it and they just go, I don't get this at all. It doesn't connect. But if you can see that the person has a understanding of how to use color and how to structure a painting, you can't really argue that they don't know how to paint. Just knowing, like, to putting the paint on the brush and putting it on the canvas and, like, constructing shape and light and color, you know how to do it, you know? So I don't know. Those are two different things. Doing something well, knowing how to do it, and doing something that connects with people. Adams Apricot says, colorblind painters make some incredible artwork. That's fun. I like that. Could be done more out of a sense of feeling, too. And out of what's interesting to it is that you don't know what that colorblind painter is seeing, you know? So what you're experiencing is different from what they were experiencing while they were making it. I think that that's very indicative of the way a lot of art is made and received. I think that my experience of creating a song, my experience of putting together a video or a podcast is different from your experience of consuming it. And I know that too from the things that people pull out. People pull out different things, that pull out different favorite parts, things that they really noticed. Sometimes people in the audience really notice things that I didn't notice while I was making it. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for the comments and the feedback today on the live. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks, Sweet Mama J, for being here and moderating. Thanks, Lulu B's and It's Quell, our old pals, for being here. This was a lot of fun. Stick around. We'll chat for a little longer after I wrap up the podcast here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com or searching Austin Archer on Apple Music or Spotify. I've got a new single out. How about that? New single out. Came out yesterday. So you're listening to this on a Thursday because it dropped on Thursday. It came out yesterday. So if you're on TikTok right now watching me say this, it's not out. It comes out on Wednesday. Comes out on Wednesday with a new music video. There's a new music video. Speaking of craft, it's one of my favorite things is to put together music videos for my songs. And I got to shoot what I always think that the latest music video is my favorite one, but, like, I really think this is a good one. I really, and this has been fun. I've gotten to hone this craft with my friend Kramer, my best friend Kramer from elementary school. We always said we were going to make movies together, and now we've started a production company together, and we make music videos, and we've made, I think this is our fourth one we've made together, and we're getting better at it, and we're honing our skills together, and we're developing our craft, and I've got a new music video for my new song, Whatever You Can Do. It's out. Go check it out on YouTube. Go listen to the song, please. The song is mixed and mastered, as is this podcast, by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go hit Chris up, themarmalademusic.com. Tell him that you heard his work on People Pleaser and that you love it and that you want to work with him on your thing. If you've got a podcast or an audiobook or a song or an album, tell him that you want to work with him and he'll give you 20% off your first audio project. Themarmalademusic.com. Tell him I sent you. Okay, that's it. Go listen to the single. Go check out the music video. Be nice to each other. We'll talk to you later. Love you. Bye-bye.